We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to another True Faith podcast with your host, Mark Corby. Delighted once again to be joined by Norman Riley. And we've got a very special guest for you today. Scorer of 39 goals and 83 appearances in all competitions for Newcastle United between 1991 and 1993. A player described by Biffer from NUFC.com, so blame him if he doesn't like this one, is a player's player, an honest player with lots of effort, deceivingly quick around the penalty box and an eye for goal.
Not sure about that.
Well, no further ado then, David Kelly. Thank you very much for joining us. It's great to see you.
No problem, guys.
So, first of all, what brings you to Newcastle today?
Come up to go on the beer with my mate Martin and Chris in the quarry in Whitley Bay. And then, obviously, we've got the Leicester game later on today. So, John Beresford kindly invited me up to do the lounges.
Brilliant stuff. Yeah, we'll see how it best for us. We're trying to get him on one of these podcasts, aren't we?
He's too miserable, Bez, to do anything. He's more expensive than me as well, Bez.
We'll come to that later. But look, David, it's going to be a little bit of a whistle stop tour of your time at Newcastle. But, you know, obviously you made your name at Warsaw. I remember seeing you score, I think it was it Watford in that bizarre cup game, 4-0?
Yeah,
4-4. I remember, you know, you made your name at Warsaw. Big move to West Ham. Didn't really work out for you there. You'll openly admit that. What exactly went wrong, do you think, at West Ham?
I think there was a mixture of a few things, actually. John Lyle had been there for quite a while. There was a group of younger players, really good young players, Julian Dix, Stevie Potts, Paul Ince, Georgie Paris, and then there was the older gang, that Liam Brady's, Alvin Martins, Alan Devonshire, and there was a split, really, I found. And it just didn't work. It didn't work for me. I spent a lot of time struggling for form, you know, not playing well enough, not scoring. You know, and ultimately, I ended up getting sold to Leicester 18 months or so later. But the only place, really, that I didn't really enjoy my football. And I think it was because, in my opinion, I thought the dressing room was a bit split.
Yeah. So it was probably the worst experience of your career.
It taught me an awful lot, I must admit.
You were still young then, of course, 23, 24-ish?
Yeah. You know, it taught me an awful lot. It taught me about the politics of football clubs. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was happy. I've never been unhappy signing anywhere. I was happy to sign, and it did teach me an awful lot about the game.
Mm-hmm. Then you moved on to Leicester City, you know, big club, who obviously were playing today. Club I would imagine is close to your heart in some format.
Yeah, absolutely. Really liked it there because David Pleat signed me. Pleater was a really good coach, knew the game, knew football players, obsessed with how to play. And yeah, I really, really enjoyed playing for him. And the reason I liked it so much at Leicester was because I found my form.
Yeah,
I'd been stagnated really at West Ham. I hadn't played well, all of my own fault. I hadn't played well, I hadn't scored many goals. You know, and I sort of... I got back on the sort of score sheet really for Leicester and really enjoyed the club.
Mm-hmm. You scored a hat-trick against Newcastle, remember that 5-4 game? Talk us through that. Your memories of that one?
Yeah, I scored a few hat-tricks at different places. Just bizarre. I think I've seen Ronaldo yesterday score his hat-trick, and it becomes a little bit of a blur because you score, then you score again, and then you're absolutely obsessed in getting the third one as a striker. And when I was at Leicester, Pleaty got the sack at Leicester. Brian Little came in. And Brian Little Really, really enjoyed working for Brian. Really nice bloke. And we're 2-0 up at home. I've got two. And I look over to the dugout and my number nine's come up. And I'm thinking, what's he doing? He can't do that. He can't take me off. I'm on hat-trick here. So I'm in the middle of the pitch and the referee's going, Ned, you've got to get off. I went, I ain't going off. I've got two here. I'm on hat-trick. I said, the gaffer's lost the plot. What's he doing? Anyway, he's pulling me over to say, come off. I'm saying, no, I'm staying on the pitch. I'm getting pushed by the referee to get off because he's subbing me. So I get off and I'm effing and jeffing at Brian. He's effing and jeffing at me. I walk straight down the tunnel, get in my car and drive home. 20 minutes left of the game.
Right.
Phones me up, Brian, a bit later. Club secretary, sorry, phones me up a little bit later. Ned, you've got to come in tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock. So I'm living in Essex.
Right.
To Leicester. So I've driven down to Essex and I've got to drive back up Sunday morning. I get on the car park. Brian pulls onto the car park. We both get out of our cars. And I went, Gaffer, what are you doing? And he went, Ned, he said, I was bringing you off. He said, the game was finished. He said, the game was absolutely finished. He said, I was just seeing the timeouts. He said, I just wanted you, because you played so well, I wanted to get you a clap from the crowd. I went, I don't want a clap. I said, I wanted to get me hat trick. Yeah. I said, I was on two goals. So he fined me a week's wages.
Right.
Oh. He did. He fined me a week's wages because basically I'd crossed the line really.
Yeah.
I stayed on. But
yeah.
So going back to the hat trick, that becomes a sort of a little bit blurred because you come obsessed with trying to get your third goal. And like when Brian bought me off and I was fuming because he denied me the opportunity of getting a hat trick.
Superb. Yeah. I obviously didn't know that one. But Leicester, did it not work out with Leicester towards the end? Were you out of favour again?
Not really. Well, Brian had came in. Pleaty got sacked, and Brian had came in. And Brian was sort of changing the
Brian team. Little lad is
He was changing the team a little bit, and he bought Colin Gordon.
Yes,
and he preferred Colin to me. So it was literally at the end of the. It was one of those again. Mm-hmm. Knock on the gaffer's door. If I'm not going to be playing, you know, I'm a big enough boy. I know the story. If you're going to put me as a substitute or be a substitute, I didn't want to do that. I was obsessed with playing for the first team. And as soon as I thought that my opportunities are going to be limited, I'd just go and have a chat with the gaffer and say, listen, if I'm not going to play, you know, because you don't want players not wanting to play for you. If, you know, if I can't get in the team, I need to go somewhere else where I can get in the team.
Yeah.
You know, and Brian was really good. And ironically, I had a conversation with Newcastle, Sunderland and the Wolves when I was leaving Leicester, and madly I signed for all three of them in concession afterwards.
I was going to mention that because you're still, I think you'd only turn around about 26 then. She was still, for me, you're still a young man.
Yeah.
You're still a young man. And how close were you to signing for Sunderland, and what was the decision why you didn't end up going there?
My uncle Ronnie was the decision.
Right.
Bless him, he's no longer with us, but he, I phoned him up and says, you know, Brian's going to sell me. I'm going to go to speak to the Wolves and Newcastle and Sunderland. He said, you've got to go to Newcastle. He said, if you're a number nine at Newcastle and you score the goals, he said, you'll be remembered forever. And ironically, 30 years later, that's what he said.
Yeah.
And it was a no-brainer. Ozzy was brilliant. Absolutely, really, really liked Ozzy. I thought he was fantastic. You know, and he just went, right, that's the money, that's the contract, let's go. So we did.
There's a rumour that our dealers, the club, were in dire straits at the time financially. They had the kind of off-the-field battles in terms of the John Hall attempted takeover. There was a lot of discontent on the terraces. Attendances were dipping. We knew as fans the club was skint. We knew that. And there's a rumour that our dealers initially put the cash up for your transfer. Is there any truth in that at all?
No idea.
No idea.
Absolutely no idea.
Clarky talked with that one.
Did he?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll have to ask him.
Yeah. Because apparently he put the money up because he was desperate for a striker. Because Mick Quinn was out.
Quinn, he was injured.
He wasn't a centre-forward. I mean, he come through as a centre-forward, but it was clear that he wasn't. Obviously, he ended up becoming a fantastic centre-half. But the club was, I mean, speaking from a fan's perspective, watching the team, despite the fact you could identify with that side, because it was full of Geordies who weren't actually that much older than me at the time, you know what I mean? These were teenagers. I was a teenager. We were desperate.
Steve Watson.
Exactly. Yeah. Alan Thompson, Robbie Elliott.
Alan Nielsen.
Exactly. Lee Meagle, there was loads of them. But when you arrived alongside Paul Bowden, obviously, and as a fan, that was like one of those moments you think, oh, thank God, you know what I mean? Thank God. So I just interesting that the Aussie thing, but
it remains
to be discussed.
Yeah, never heard that.
We'll try and find
never
out.
Never heard that.
Stalk them on Twitter.
I seen Paul Bowden. I was at watching Cheltenham a couple of months ago, and Paul Bowden was there.
Really?
It's really weird to see him, yeah. Nice to see him, because we signed at the same time. And
yeah. You know, but he was on loan, wasn't he? But yeah. he didn't get, we didn't put the money up.
No.
Well, we're skinned. I mean, just going to come to the next point. I mean, when you arrived, we were hovering around the relegation zone, playing kids, because there was no one else, and Ozzy just simply wasn't backed. What was the feeling like? What was your first impression of the dressing room, the lads? Like,
I thought the lads were brilliant. It was like going into a madhouse. It was the old training ground.
Benwell.
Yeah.
It was the old training ground. It was cold and it was dark and dirty and messy, but I just found that the dressing room was just really good, because, like you say, about all of those kids that were in the team, they were just happy to be playing football, and most of them were Geordies, and they just wanted to play for the team. So there was an enthusiasm at the club. You know, Quinny was injured, which is a massive, massive miss at the time to any club, because Quinny was such a good goal scorer.
Yeah.
You know, but I just found that I fitted in straight away, because I thought, this is like a not place.
You must have been like
this is great.
Almost like a veteran from day one.
I was, yeah, I was old man Ned.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. At 20, 25, 26, whatever I was. And all these kids are like just running around the training ground, brilliant. Yeah. And to be fair to Ozzy, he just wanted to play football, you know, and he was trying to play in that expansive way of keeping the ball on the floor and passing it around, and, you know, but results are results, aren't they? And as we all know, you know, the results don't come, you get the sack.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, actually. Ordinas, as a coach, had become known at Swindon for that style of football, and they were brilliant Swindon that season, that they went up and then got demoted because of the Lou McCorry betting irregularities, interestingly enough. You mentioned Lou McCorry, haven't you? And he comes to Newcastle, and, you know, you can see, it's almost like Ordinas for me. I look back now and I think he was like ahead of his time in terms of how he wanted to play football. And I'm wondering what he was like as a coach. And also, you mentioned the youngsters in the squad. It looked to me like there was maybe a lack of leadership there. You know, Ordinas doesn't come across as the kind of man who's like got that kind of firmness that's needed in a relegation battle.
Yeah, possibly. But Ozzy is a player, you know. He was a world-class player. In his day, he was in the top five, wasn't he? You know, he was brilliant. You know, but the sort of the immaturity of the younger players in the team eventually sort of worked. I know we stayed up, and it was late when we stayed up and stuff like that, but I think if he hadn't have got the balance right between the training and the sort of discipline, I think he did have a decent balance. But ultimately, if you haven't got enough players, and we didn't have enough quality players at the time, it was always going to be a struggle.
Aye.
You know, and hence Ozzy gets the sack, and then King Kev comes in.
Well, before we come to King Kev, did you ever feel that you may have lost the support? I mean, I know you had only been there a couple of months at this point, but because my own memories is that the support was still always there, because they wanted the kids to
absolutely
do well.
Absolutely, yeah. Because they're their own, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, and every football fan out there, you want somebody to come through the community into your football team and then be a star, you know, like Gascoigne, you know.
Absolutely.
You want the poor Gascoignes to come through in your team.
Well, I tell you, I remember you talking about the support and the crowd there. One of the moments I remember under Ordinas when we were really struggling, and you got the winner in this game, Bristol Rovers at home. Yeah. And the support that day, it felt immense. It almost felt like the supporters gave that much to the players. It lifted everyone. And that was one of those moments, I think, actually, we might be our reacher. It didn't transpire ultimately because Ozzy got sacked. But that moment, as you say, it was a kind of key moment in terms of the crowd hasn't gone yet. The crowd
I don't think that the crowd at the Newcastle crowd can ever be criticised for not staying with the team. Mm-hmm. You know, there's external problems and difficulties, as there has been, as we know, over the last few years before the new owners have come in. But the crowd never go away from the team.
Yeah,
I don't ever think. You know, I think the crowd are always with the team.
Yeah,
and that was you know, it was 10, 11, 12, 13, 14,000. So the gates were very low.
Yeah.
But the crowd never gave up on the team, I didn't think.
Yeah.
I think they were always backed the club.
Well, I think it's testament that I was gutted when I found out Ordinas was sacked as a young supporter. I can't remember many people going, "Yeah, he had to go." But then Kevin Keegan comes in. I mean, we've talked about this for years, about how we felt Kevin Keegan, because I never seen him as a player. I was too young. So for him to come back, it was just to give everyone a huge lift. Talk us through it as a player, the dressing room. First of all, Ozzy going. Were you disappointed? And then Kevin Keegan comes in.
I was disappointed Ozzy had left. But having being a player for quite a few years, you get why he goes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you can understand that. It's a results-driven business, as we all know. You know, so disappointed that he was leaving. But I seem to remember we heard that Kevin was going to come back. Right. Some of the players heard that he was coming back, and it was like, we're going to get Keegan. You know, Keegan's coming in. He's coming over from Spain. He's put his golf clubs away, and he's coming back. He's sort of coming in. And there was like a little bit of a buzz, really, that was the talk. And Sir John, you know, bless him, he'd got the vision. And when he got Kevin in and he went, we're going to be in the Champions League and we're going to be in the Premier League in 20 minutes, he actually believed it. And so did Kevin. And he sold it to Kevin. And, you know, Kevin eventually changed the club for the better. Mm-hmm. He really did with Sir John's help. Mm-hmm. But Kevin was absolutely brilliant. I really like, I love Kevin. Really good. He was a really good gaffer. You know, no tactics, just attack. Let's go. Suited me down to the ground.
Well, you certainly flourished under Keegan, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Simple
as
that. We'll go into that in more detail. But
I think the first game, obviously Keegan's first game. I mean, it was a pure circus, wasn't it? I remember.
It was bedlam.
I mean, Bristol City. Like it was on like national news. It was on like news at 10 and ITV news. And you're thinking this is a second division club at the bottom of the table. But Keegan was obviously that big, you know, world superstar as a player. He comes back in this game for me. I mean, you know, you scoring two goals, just everything, but it was almost like the perfect day. Just what was that like in playing in that atmosphere? Because you've gone from struggling against relegation, still are, obviously, but I guess from 14,000 to all of a sudden, what was it like?
It's weird because you get to the ground as players, you know, a certain amount of time before kickoff, obviously. And we go from driving into the ground and actually just getting onto the car park and having absolutely no problems parking and all that sort of stuff, to the Bristol City game where it's rammed, the whole of Newcastle is rammed, the road system's blocked. Mm-hmm. So you're panicking then because you're... And this is like 3 or 4 hours before kickoff. So Kevin just brought in the party atmosphere, and all of a sudden it was as if the whole town had just, you know, woken up and decided, right, we're having a party on Saturday. And everybody was in town. And I can remember driving... from the house and thinking, I'm going to be late here. I'm never late for anything. And I'm thinking, bloody hell, I'm going to be late. There's that many people in the way. You can't get in. I couldn't get into the car park because there was thousands of people just like walking across. It was just bedlam. It was absolute bedlam.
Perfect start though. 2 goals for you. 3-0. Yeah.
Great start, obviously, for me. If you know, when a new manager comes in, all players want to impress the manager, the new manager, because it's a new start and ultimately you're back on trial again. You know, so for me to score two in his first game was absolutely brilliant.
The atmosphere was absolutely incredible. One of them standout games I think we've talked about on numerous occasions, you know, that just from start to finish.
Yeah, it was,
The build-up as well, and even people didn't want to go home after the game. It was like a cup final for us. we don't get that many.
I can remember Martin saying, my pal, saying ages and ages ago about going across to the Strawberry and like staying there until kicking out time. He says, and this was like on one game, Kevin's first game.
Yeah.
And that had never happened all season because the results were poor, the team were poor. You know, you don't stay in the pub all night if you're getting beat.
Yeah, but true. Yeah. Well, the bandwagon started, let's be honest, it was a bandwagon. I started going to away games. The next game was Blackburn. We took the lead, you scored again. Mm-hmm. And Blackburn were top of the league. They were spending big bucks, weren't they, at the time? But we took the league, got beat. But, you know, Keegan had 16 games to... really save us from disaster, because we would have went in liquidation. Now, there is some key moments where we'll be picking them out, but the first one for me is the Sunderland game. A goal you described, I remember, as spawny arse. Can you remember that? But look, you nearly signed for Sunderland, you chose to sign for Newcastle in the number 9 shirt. Your uncle Ronnie was right, let's be honest. And that day, you probably did, you know, put a place in Newcastle fans' hearts that day. Talk us through
folklore.
That game.
Folklore.
Yeah, it was... was it paddling down with rain?
It was.
I thought it was. Yeah, I was trying to think about it.
Was it televised as well, the match?
No, not that.
No,
one.
Was it the one following season?
We're both pissing down with rain.
Yeah. Was it an early kickoff?
It was an early kickoff. Yeah, but it, you know, fortunate to score the goal, obviously. But you score certain goals in your career, and you play in certain games in your career, and then when you go off into the dressing room, the hairs on the back of your neck are still standing up.
Wow.
And that was one of those type of games, because it was that important for us, you know, in the fight for survival. The result was that important that it was one of those sitting in the dressing room thinking, that's just a massive, massive game. That is a really, really important result. And that's what it felt like. It just felt as if, like, you know, sort of there was that sort of weight that's sort of been lifted. Obviously, you go and play on the Tuesday and get beat, or the Saturday and get beat, or whatever. But yeah, it was a really, really pivotal moment in the season. And I think that sort of helped with the survival effort.
Just a quick point before I move on to the game. We went on a losing streak after that game, ironically. Yeah. I think everyone thought we were going to be safe, but I think we lost 5 on the bounce.
We did, yeah.
I went down to Derby, and when we got beat 4-1, that crazy game when we had 3 sent off, 4-1 down. But what a fucking battle on and off the pitch. Yeah. Because that day, everyone was so proud.
I think Kevin, that's where I got the chasing the crisp packet across the pitch take from. Because, as you say, we got a few players sent off. Well, some dubious, some not so dubious.
Some dubious, some not so dubious. Brian Cotton, I think his name will always be remembered, the arsehole that day. But look, I remember that game for a lot of reasons. There was a bomb scare, so the game got delayed.
Yeah.
But the Newcastle fans refused to walk away from the ground. Everyone just had to be there. Standard.
Yeah.
When the score after the first minute and Brock was sent off, Newcastle fans started throwing seats onto the pitch. Probably trying to get it stopped. Not me, I was only young. Went 2 down, then Scott, you got sent off, didn't he? Yeah. For 2 booting fences on Gabbiadini, who was a bit of a pain in the arse for us. But it was
he was a good player, Marco. It's got to be said. He was a good player.
He was a great player. He always did damage against Newcastle. But just from my own personal memory, the second half, he's come out, and at that point, we had 9 men. Then Terry Mack was sent off. But we pull one back. Your head up, parried Peacock back the net. And the momentum just kept going. The atmosphere kept going. The support kept going. Hughes kept going, and then it was just ran out of steam in the end, and that 2 late goals, and O'Brien sent off. But lasting memory of that, Ned, is when the players left the pitch, you hoid your shirt in the away end, and you looked at the fans and said, I couldn't have fucking done anything else today, lads. And I think you won everyone over again.
Yeah, I think, like we said earlier on, it pivotal games and sort of moments in people's careers and stuff like that. For whatever type of football player I was always 100%. I was always all in. You know, I wanted to do the best that I could possibly do for the team that I was playing. As a West Bromwich Albion supporter, I signed for the Wolves. You know, no problem for me, because it's a football club and I want to do the best. It's a really good football club. And I haven't got an issue, you know, saying that. My pals who are Albion fans now, they all think like I'm Judas and all that sort of stuff because I went to the Wolves. But it's just, you just go, you sort of, that game, because the sending-offs were all staggered, wasn't they? It wasn't as if, like, there was a big fight and, like, 2 or 3 got to it. It was, like, sort of moments through the game, so it was after so many minutes, and then there was a bit of a lull and stuff like that. But, like you say, the supporters don't ever give up on you, and away support is, I always think, is really, really special. I went to Villa start of the season when Danny Ings scored his overhead kick. And sat, my boy's a Newcastle fan, and sat in the Newcastle end. It was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. But I can imagine, as a football supporter, that Derby game was one of them that just brings player and supporters together.
I was at that Villa game, and I heard that you were there, and saw a photo of someone I know next year, and I just remember being very upset that I didn't bump into you, mate. So there you go.
We could have done it down there, couldn't we?
No, exactly. So we're talking about this losing streak, and obviously this defeat at Derby, Plymouth winning, we're in the bottom 3, 2 games to go. Now this game coming up against Portsmouth, if I start bubbling, yeah, forgive us, but because we've spoken about this on numerous occasions, like the hairs genuinely stand up my arms. This game and this goal that you score in this game is, for me, in Newcastle United's modern history, it's probably, if you had to put down one single most important goal, it's that, because the club was on the brink of oblivion. I mean, total oblivion. Yeah. And look what happened subsequent to that goal. This goal was, there aren't words to describe what it meant to me as a fan, and what it meant to Mark as a fan, and I'd imagine thousands and thousands of others. So the game itself, you know, as I say, as a fan, bag of nerves in the morning, like I'm really scared, like genuinely scared, but it's going to be the end of days for us, this is fans, and especially at that age, a teenager, you just see this kind of bleak picture ahead. And I would love to know what the build-up to it was like for you as a player, what the feeling was around the squad, how KK was to kind of get you psychologically prepared for it, and just the atmosphere, the goal, the celebrations, just gone for it, mate.
Kevin was his usual. Him and Terry and Quinny, 2 o'clock. Normally 2 o'clock, you all start getting ready. You get your gear on. You go out for you go out and do your warm up and stuff like that. But it was quite odd because, as we all know, they all like the horses, and Kevin and Quinny and Terry Mack, they would be in the office watching whatever race it was from wherever it was. As if it was just like, that's just what it was.
Yeah.
Guardiola's like that, apparently.
Yeah. And he comes into the dressing room, he has a bit of a chat, and then he goes, oh, we got the 215 at wherever it is, and goes back out of the dressing room and goes, what to tell you again? And that was how it was. It's just, you know, it was just, everybody was calm. I seem to remember that the dressing room was just like, sort of, was normal. There was never any pressure with Kevin. I didn't think anyway. And it was like, well, we're going to win. And that was the vibe around the dressing room. Well, we're going to win. We're going to be okay. We're going to win. And like, it's sort of, that's the belief that he put into you. You know, I thought I was going to score in every single game under Kevin. I did. I used to think, right, you know, he gives me a free run at everything. And I spoke to Gav Peacock about it a while ago. And it was just like, he used to say to Gav, don't be running back. Don't run back anyway. Just stay up front. Just stay where you are. And that gave Gavin the license to be the player he was, how good he was.
Yeah, class.
Yeah, he was. He was absolutely class. But it was just, it was literally one of them. Well, we're going to win anyway. Don't worry about it. Yeah. You know, the goal will come. A goal will come. And even at half time when he went, just calm down, everybody. We're all okay. He said, we're playing well. We're doing all right. Crowd are with us. You know, just keep going.
Well, you're going to have to talk about the goal there. You're going to have to. Come on.
it's funny because I seem to remember, I never scored any goals from outside the penalty box in most of my career.
Right.
And I thought that I was outside the penalty box when I scored that goal. And I watched it yesterday because I was coming on here with you guys. And I watched it yesterday and I was like 5 yards inside the penalty box. So all these 30 years, I thought that was one of my goals that I scored from outside the penalty box.
Right.
And it wasn't.
So I take you don't watch your goals back often then?
No.
The most important goal for us in our lifetime.
I've had it in my head that I was on that picture there and I was outside the penalty box and I was a good 5 yards inside the penalty box. It was a fantastic goal.
Oh, brilliant.
Absolutely, yeah. It was one of my best goals, I would say.
Can you remember Kevin Keegan's goal on his debut for QPR? For Newcastle against QPR?
Yes.
It's very similar.
The scenes were like...
I'm talking about the actual goal. Yeah. Keegan Verratti, yeah. Keegan 1-0, eruption, bedlam. Kelly, Quinn.
Yeah.
Kelly, half volley, just
half
chaos.
Half volley on the rise. Come on, let's make it a bit more difficult than it was.
From 40 yards inside the box.
From outside the box. But
another memory from that is your interview after the game. And you touched on the atmosphere. I think it was Alan McLaughlin. You mentioned some of your in the game. And he said, I can't believe the noise.
Maka said that to me, bless him. He's passed, sadly.
Yeah,
Yeah, absolutely. And he, because I was in the national team with Maka, and he said that to me on the pitch. He went, I just can't believe it. He said, this place is absolutely ridiculous. He said, it's absolutely ridiculous. And that's an opposing player.
Yeah.
Talking about the home support of how noisy it was. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was across the board, really, because... It just was, but that was hairs on the back of your neck for a lot of people, especially for me, because it ended up being the winner, which was like unbelievable.
Massive. That goal, I'll tell you, that goal and a goal that Liam O'Brien scored at Roker Park in a 1-1 draw a couple of seasons earlier, in terms of celebrations, and I'll say it now, despite the many hundreds of matches I've been to subsequently, those celebrations for me are the ones that will always stick out. I mean, that goal that you scored... It was like last year's a room, you know what I mean? Like it was absolute carnage. It was absolute carnage, and it was a beautiful carnage. And it'll be one of those when I'm on my deathbed, it'll pop up my head, mate. So thanks for that.
So thanks for that. But speaking of carnage, before we move on to the more enjoyable season, I suppose, Leicester away, going back to your old ground. Then we're going for promotion.
Yeah.
We didn't, you know, it was the days before mobile phones, didn't know the scores and stuff. Talk us through that last couple of minutes because it was absolute bedlam, wasn't it?
Chaos, absolute chaos. I mean, I ended up in the away end.
Yes.
sitting next to everybody in my kit, thinking, I can't go across that pitch now. It's full of Leicester fans. I'm going to get battered.
Yeah.
So I just stayed where I was for about 10 minutes. But Was it? Did Walshy score an OG?
Yeah.
At the end?
Yeah.
It did count as an OG, didn't it?
So, to paint a picture for the listeners, Newcastle take the lead, Gavin Peacock. Yeah. Fantastic chip first half. Walsh scored an equaliser in the last minute, and then he scored an own goal in injury time, which stopped them going up. And we survived. You ended up in the away end with Newcastle supporters because Leicester fans kicked off and invaded the pitch.
Well, you can't blame them, can you? Last game. They've got to invade their own pitch, haven't they? Last game of the season. It's just the norm. Maybe not these days, but it used to be.
You get punished severely for a new mate.
You do, sadly. You lose your season ticket and stuff like that, which is a real shame. But yeah, I
we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
We'd sort of, like you said, there was no mobile phones and stuff like that. So nobody knew the results, what was going on. You know, I can remember towards the end of the game, sort of kept looking over to the bench to see if there was anything, any sort of signs that we were safe or, and like Kevin and Terry and the staff and stuff like that, nobody knew. So we didn't know whether we were going to be safe. But then Big Walshy smashed one into the bottom corner of his own goal, which was a massive, massive
good
relief.
Good old Steve Walsh. But yeah. We'll survive before we move on to the following season. I mean, at the time, Keegan's his contract was up, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
We had to persuade him to stay. Thankfully, he did stay. There was rumours.
I think he was always going to stay.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
So John's got a couple of quid in his pocket. He's going to give Kevin a few of it, isn't he?
Well, he said we were going to survive, then take off. Yeah. That was his plan, and everyone bought into it. But before the start of the season, there was rumours that he may have had to cash in on you, Gavin Peacock and Kevin Scott, because you were our prize assets at the time.
Blue chips, mate.
Any rumour on that? Can you remember?
No, absolutely none.
None?
I went back down to Birmingham for the summer.
Yeah.
Went on holiday wherever I went and then just came back, reported back for pre-season. Nothing. Oh. Absolutely nothing.
There you go.
Nothing about any of us leaving, in fact. Because Kevin, after the season had finished, Kevin had a normal end of season meeting, you know, have a nice holiday, guys. You know, see you later. Good luck with all you lads who are going away, your international teams, and see you on June, the whatever it was going to be. But there was no thought process of Gav, Kev, Scotty, or me leaving. Absolutely not. I'd only been there 20 minutes. I didn't want to leave that quick.
Well, I mean, especially because I suppose you had the feeling maybe that we're on the cusp of something special, and I guess that ties into this question.
I didn't have the feeling of that. I had the knowledge of that he was going to sign a load of players.
Well, this is what I want to get your opinions on. When those players start arriving, because I mean, when we signed Sunderland's captain, for example, it was front page of the Chronicle, and you're thinking, we've just signed them. He's just captain in the cup final in Bracewell for me.
Player.
I remember in the 80s, he was an outstanding player on the Everton team. So as those players start arriving, how did that feel, I guess?
Brilliant, but we sort of knew that because he'd said, you know, once we survive, you know, the club will be a different place. You know, and he wasn't being critical of anybody. He said, but the quality, he said, is going to go through the roof. He said, because he said, I'm going to get a few players in. And it was always when we survive. It wasn't if or possibly. It was always when. And it was like, I went away. I think I was away with Ireland, then went on holiday. And I was just, it was one of them. You're just waiting to find out who he was going to sign. And it, as a player, thinking, right, it's going to be a different dressing room. I'm going to have to, you know, pull my socks up and have a bit more of a go. If you can do, have a little bit more of a go. Yeah. Because the quality was going to be different. And like you say, Brace coming in, what a signing. Mm-hmm. What a signing Brace was. Yeah. You know, what a player. Mm-hmm. What a great player.
Venison, Beresford, then Robbie Lee end up coming in. Yeah. But look, I mean, we could do a podcast on this for an hour alone on this season, because it was just arguably the most enjoyable season I've ever witnessed watching Newcastle. That and the following campaign. 11 out of 11 wins at the start. Obviously, went to Borough as well. What a night out that was when you got two in the cup win. One of my best memories, though, our favourite memories, is the West Ham game when we scored two in a minute and you scored that rebound at the Gallagher then. You ran over at the corner and there was a pitch invasion. But yeah. in a joyous one. And yeah. I was one of the ones who was trying to jump on you when you scored. But that must have been a special goal for you, especially because, you, as you've admitted now.
Absolutely.
It didn't really work out for West Ham. That goal must have...
That goal for me was sort of a point in my career where it was, well, actually, I'm not as bad as you lot think I was.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was. You know, scoring against West Ham. I had a really tough time at West Ham and it just didn't happen for me. But scoring against them was sort of a little bit of an inward justification, really. Well, actually, yeah, I am a proper goal scorer and I can score. Mm-hmm. It just didn't happen at West Ham.
Yeah. So out of your them opening 11 games, I'm going to include the cup games as well, because we had a fantastic start to the season. What stands out for you? Obviously, the West Ham goal, a couple of Borough, the victory at Roker Park as well.
Yeah. Did Liam score a free kick?
Free kick. Free
kick. Liam O'Brien over the wall.
Yeah. Yeah. The man with the longest... Arms, Liam O'Brien, and the deepest pockets. Yeah, he's a fantastic player. Fantastic bloke, Liam. I love him, absolutely. Yeah.
Did you play for him with Ayland and Tranmere?
Yeah. He's a great fellow. He's the only person that goes in around with two other people and then refuses to buy any drinks for anybody else.
Right.
Honestly.
Good lad.
He does. He
sounds like Rob Lee.
Yeah. If you're not involved in his round, you're not getting one off him.
Yeah.
He, as I say, long arms, longer pockets.
Just after the 11 out of 11, though, obviously standout moments was the hat-trick against Cambridge when you wrestled for the ball with Gav to get the penalty. What conversation happened? Or was it just a case of get off, it's mine?
Gav was penalty taker, yes. Wasn't he? But I was on hat-trick. Yeah. So, and, you know, I said this a couple of weeks ago to somebody. I was terrible at penalties. Because I used to think, well, it ain't that far away from the goal, so I've got a good chance. Keeper might go the wrong way, and I might score. It was just an opportunity to have another shot at goal, but I was awful at penalties, really. And I used to take them. But I missed two in a week, one for Newcastle and one for Ireland against Wales, and I hit the crossbar on both of them.
Oh,
yeah. And like Gav's got the ball, and he's going, I'm the penalty taker. I said, I'm on hat trick. He said, I'm the penalty taker. And him being
Christian.
A godly person. I spoke to him very kindly and said, if you don't give me the ball, we're going to fall out. But he had, honestly, you could, if you saw a clipping of it when I'd scored the penalty, he massively got the hump because he didn't want me to take it. Obviously, we're all goal scorers. We all want to score. And he didn't speak to me for about 3 or 4 days because I nicked the ball off him. Mm-hmm.
If you don't give me that penalty, I will rain down on you with great vengeance and furious anger.
Well, you got one in the last minute, didn't you? You end up getting one in the end, 4-1.
I said to him in the dressing room, I said, I know what you're moaning for, you scored.
I mean, I reckon if Peacock had been playing now, that kind of number 10 role like that was sort of brought in by the Spanish national team in the late noughties, I think Peacock would have been like one of the best number 10s the country's produced. He was unreal.
Absolutely.
So the season, obviously, now there's a couple of ups and downs. There's a period of a Christmas where there's a slight wobble, 5 draws in 6 games and a defeat. But I don't think there was ever any doubt we weren't getting promoted. And obviously, Egan's and signs, you know, Scott Sellers was a wonderful player. We've spoken about him on numerous occasions being marked. But Andy Cole comes in. I'd just be interested, was he as good as he subsequently turned out to be the moment you saw him? Did you think this kid can play from the off? Or was he a bit sort of raw, I guess, at that point?
I think he was a little bit raw. But he'd got absolute talent, hadn't he? And... You know straight away when the player's a good player. Like when Bez come in and Venners and Robbie came in and they the training games just become a little bit better. Mm-hmm. The quality's a little bit better. And Coley came in, and I remember a couple of the first training sessions where we used to do 5 sides and shooting sessions and whatever with Kevin and stuff like that. And Coley would always score. always, and they were all crappy goals, you know, from like keeper would make a save and he'd tap it in, you know, keeper hit the crossbar and he'd tap it in, you know, come from a corner, they'd be bouncing all over the place and he'd tap it in, and you just thought this kid's going to be really good because he's got the know-how and the luck, because some of it is luck of standing in the right place. You know, you make your own luck. I know that, but he just got that instinct, and he was easy to play with as well, as you know, as a strike partner. He was easy to play with because he moved and he was an intelligent player.
How different was he to Gav? Because you and Peacock had a fantastic partnership, yeah. And then Andy Cole comes in. Peacock got injured and he couldn't get back in the side.
No, that's right. Yeah.
So if you could summarize partnerships,
Gav was better on the ball. Coley was better scoring.
Yeah.
Box in the box.
He was, yeah, simply. Gav could play. Gav could link the play and he could bring people into play. You could always go through Gav in that, like you said, just in that number 10 position. Mm-hmm. You could always rely on him not to give the ball away. Where Coley, things were in front of him and he'd shoot, or things were knocked up to him, he'd lay it off and then he'd be in the penalty box. Yeah. Gav didn't used to do that as much because Gav wanted to play with everybody. Yeah. He wanted to be involved in the build-ups of everything.
I think Cole is another player who, like yourself, doesn't really appreciate how much he's adored up here. You know, it didn't turn out well
doesn't
in
understand,
the end.
Not appreciate, yeah. Doesn't understand.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. That's the right word. But you mentioned goals. One just popped in my head there, Wolves at home. Now, that was a screamer. That was outside of the box. Remember that one? You got two that day as well.
I think that was the third one outside the box.
He's counting.
Oh, against Wolves as well, though. That
this is it.
As a buggy.
As an Albion fan, yeah. It was always good. It was funny because I scored against the Albion when I was at the Wolves. And I was getting a bit of stick for being an Albion fan at the Wolves. And I scored against the Albion. And that was one of those things. Well, actually, you know, yeah, I'm here to play for you. I'm not. I might be an Albion fan, but I'm a Wolves player for the 90 minutes.
Yeah,
you know, it's
you were at work, right? You were at work, weren't you, mate?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. You know, you're 100%. You're fully committed, 100% for whatever team you're playing for or you're coaching. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to be obsessed with the club.
I mean, Norman mentioned before it was just a matter of when we were going to get promoted. It could have been against the Macklems, couldn't it?
Well, you said earlier about the start when we went.
Yeah.
I mean, we were on 30 points after.
Yeah.
After 10 games. After 10 games.
Yeah.
And in the dressing room, it's like, you know, who looking forward into the calendar, thinking what game is going to be the game that we actually get promoted, because we were that good in that year. In comparison to everybody else in the league. And like you said about the Christmas period, it just sort of festered down a little bit. But it was literally just, well, we're going to get promoted. The quality of the squad is going to go up.
Yeah.
Hi.
You know, you know from when you're top of the league and you're sort of racing away with it, you know that there's going to be more incomings because where we're going to, the quality is loads better. So the quality of the players got to go up as well.
Absolutely, and quality of the players. Scott said that's free kick against Sunderland, of course, in the pissing rain. Yeah. Last memory from that is when, was it you and Terry Butcher running towards the corner and he pushed her in a big, huge puddle?
Terry's commandos. Yeah.
Terry's commandos.
Terry's commandos. Yeah. Dickhead.
I went swimming down, swimming into the corner.
But another great day though, Matt. Beating the Macklems at home, you know, on the cusp of promotion.
Yeah, and any derby win is special. Because it, you know, whichever team you support and whatever game you're at, derbies are the best games. They are. Even when they're crap and you win 1-0, they're still the best games because you've won 1-0 and it's bragging rights, isn't it, for another 6 months really until you play the next time. You know, and the difference with both clubs as well, being in different leagues and stuff like that, you know, there's not any derbies anymore.
Brilliantly put, Ned. And then on to Grimsby. Grimsby away.
Yeah, Kevin wasn't very happy, was he, when we dunked the bucket on him?
That was he, wasn't it? I knew it.
We were having a debate with him, was you or Clarky, but yeah, you'd hear Clarky.
I think it was Joints, actually. Man. I mean, I spoke to Nash. He got the sack, didn't he, the other day, Nash, from...
yes.
Was he in Egypt or the United Arab Emirates?
Another one.
Yeah, I spoke to him. He'd actually texted me about Blackie, bless him.
Oh, yes.
Steve Black.
He was in Blackie, yeah. What a fantastic guy. Lovely man.
Yeah.
Yes, I would say that it was two of us. Kevin wasn't very happy, but you know.
Well, come on,
the goal was
outrageous.
It was terrible, wasn't it? It was. It was a bobbler.
I thought it was lethal. It was outrageous. That's how I'd describe it. Rolling the keeper the last minute, you're on your last legs.
I thought it was a scuff.
Perception, right?
Rounded the keeper and then sort of half sort of misses it. And then
the angle was dead tight. We were like it's a world-class goal.
I'm trying to do myself a disfavour here.
I think we need to put it on the big screen.
Humble.
I might change that. It was fantastic.
It was absolutely class, man.
I was brilliant on that day.
Have you ever heard Mick Lowe's commentary since?
I haven't, no.
Mick Lowe's.
No.
I'll send it to you.
Right, okay.
It's one of those, again, they're going up. Here's on the arms go up. How he described that moment is just incredible. And Mick didn't know it existed. I sent it to him. And
do you know what? Remember that game really, really well, because we'd got three sides of the ground.
Yes,
yeah. And obviously Grimsby being black and white as well, it just looked like a home game. Yeah. You know, but there was Geordies absolutely everywhere, hanging out of every sort of space that was there that could be filled. There was full of Newcastle fans. You know, and fair play to the Grimsby fans, and because they just got overrun by Geordies.
Yeah,
it was like a home game.
Yeah.
It really was like
great
a home game
for me.
The what a glamorous place as well to secure promotion.
Oh, the fantastic.
Glamorous surrounds of Grimsby.
No better place.
Well, I tell you what, Cod Army. Obviously, the last game of the season, the standout moments are just incredible. This particular game, what was it like for you, given everything that was around it? The fact you're banging a hat-trick, it was on TV, Lindisfarne before the game, the stand gunning up. It was almost like the future is bright. I don't know. Was that a moment in your career that is a standout for you? Because obviously as fans, if for us it's one of our standout games, you know?
Yeah. Standout, absolutely, yes, because we'd won the league and the party celebration was going to happen. And standout, yes, again, you know, scoring a hat-trick as well and Coley getting a hat-trick.
And against Leicester.
Also, and against my former club and stuff like that. But because we'd already won the league... And we'd all been on the piss for a few days. there was no training. I can't actually remember training really that week before the last game of the season. I just think we just had days off. It was like I come in and we'll do a little bit for an hour, and then we've won the league, and it was that relaxed and that sort of everything was so calm because the job was done. It was all finished, and we're playing another game. And I do believe this, that it wouldn't have mattered who we played. We'd have beaten somebody 4, 5, 6.
Well, that's like on the playoffs.
We would have beaten them. We were just in that. We had that momentum. We had such good players as well. Whether it was Leicester or Grimsby or whoever, we'd have won that last game comfortably against anybody.
But just again another absolutely fantastic moment watching Newcastle United.
I wasn't expecting it to be my last game.
Well, we could have come to that. Talk us through it, because obviously what exactly happened? How did the seal happen? And
right,
were you pissed off, Ned?
So I'm driving down the A1M with Claire, my wife, and our newly born son Zach, who's now nearly 30.
Frightening,
scary days. Anyway. And mobile phones used to be as big as a bottle of pop, didn't they, back in the day? Instead of like the lovely ones that we got now, they were huge. And anyway, I'd got a mobile phone and the phone goes and it's the gaffer. And he went, "Where are you?" I said, "I'm driving down the A1M, gaffer." I said, "I'm going home." I said, "I'm going to Birmingham." He went, "You need to pull over." I went, "Are you selling me?" He went, we need to have a chat. I went, "Fucking hell." So put the phone down. So says to Claire, my wife, I said, "I'm getting binned off here." And she went, "No, he might not be that. You know, stop being negative. He might not be that." Pulls off the motorway. So goes up to gets off the motorway and goes to a safe area. Phones him back. And he said, "Right, listen, Eddie." He said, "I know what you like." He says, "So don't shout at me." He said, "We've had a couple of offers for you." He said, "We've had a couple of offers." He said, "And if you want, you can go and speak to them." I said, "Are you fucking me off then?" And he went, "Well," he said, "I know full well." He said, "We know each other." And it was a blunt conversation. It was just because we, as I say, I loved him. I really liked him. And it was just like it was just one of them conversations, really. And he said, "I'm signing somebody." He said, "He's going to play next year." He said, "So your opportunities to play next year he said, you're welcome to stay. He said, but you'll probably be number three or number four. And I went, yeah, stuff that gaffer, you know, sort of thing. I said, who are you signing? He said, I can't tell you. I said, well, who's in for me? He said, well, Wolves have agreed a fee.
Yeah.
He said, Graham Turner's a manager. He said, go and speak to Graham Turner. He said, and there's another club. He said, but we haven't agreed a fee with them. And I said, who's that? He said, well, I can't tell you that. He said, because we haven't agreed a fee. I said, all right. I said, who are you signing? He said, I can't tell you. And I went, I said, Gaffer, I said, come on. I said, bloody hell. I said, I won't tell anybody. He went, he said, I can't. He said, it's not over. He said, we haven't got it sorted out yet. He said, and I can't tell you. I said, well, I ain't going then. I said, I'll see you at the end of the summer. I said, I'm coming back. I said, I ain't going. I said, I ain't speaking to anybody. I'm coming back unless you tell me who you're signing. He went, he said, you promise you won't tell anybody else? I said, yeah, yeah. I said, you know, I'm not going to tell anybody. And he went, he said, I think that we're going to sign Peter Beardsley. And my exact words were, excuse me, guys, for swearing. Fuck me, Gaffer. If I was you, I'd sign Peter Beardsley instead of David Kelly. That's what I said to him. Yeah. I started laughing.
Yeah.
I went, fucking hell, Peter Beardsley, brilliant. What a fucking signing. And yeah. I'm like, I'm effing and Jeff. I'm what a signing. I said, he's brilliant. Yeah. I said, you're gonna get him. He's going to come. He went, yeah. I said, well, I feel like not moving now. I said, because you've told me you're going to sign. He said, go and have a chat with him. He said, if you can sort it out, you can sort it out. And I've got a year left in my contract.
Yeah.
I said, I ain't going without my money. And he went, what do you mean? I said, well, you owe me. I said, I've got 12 months left. He went, you can't do that. I said, well, I ain't going then.
Do you get your money?
So we done a deal, yeah.
Yeah.
We done a deal. And then I went to the Wolves. But ironically, if you remember, Peter got elbowed in the face.
Yeah.
And he was out for 3 months.
Yeah.
And they signed Alex Matthey.
Yeah.
And he played for the first 3 months. So if I'd have stayed, I'd have played for the first 3 months.
Well, I was going to ask you that, mate. You know, obviously, the way you've kind of framed it there, it's almost like the Beardsley deal kind of hinged on the money from you possibly as well. You know, I mean, the club could have afforded to keep you on and bring Beardsley, but I can kind of see the rationale there. But on reflection, do you regret the fact that you left, given what, you know, what transpired? And now you kind of like targeting sort of what might have been, but ultimately, have you ever looked back and thought, you know, if I'd hung around then, I might have got like the first 3 months in the Premier League and proved myself, and then that would have been it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think. But what I will say is that in all of my footballing life, in the nearly 40 years that I've been involved in football, you make the decision at the time for the right reason. Yeah. And when I went to speak to Graham Turner, the Wolves are a massive club, fantastic club, and he was trying to build a team to get promoted. Mm-hmm. And how Kevin had said it to me about Peter coming in and the team coming in and the players that he was going to sign to come in, my chances of playing were going to be minimal. And I thought, I'm going somewhere, it's a great club, massive support base, they've got a chance of getting promoted, and I'm going to play.
Home as well, I suppose, really. But yeah, they're not playing it at all.
That didn't really, going back to Birmingham was great sort of thing, but that didn't really matter because, you know, you're a footballer and you play for whichever club.
Nomadic.
You are, yeah. That's how it is. You know, I've had loads of houses. I've had loads of houses purely and simply because I've done a load of travelling. So I don't regret any of it. All the decisions I made at the time were for the positive reason. Aye. And like, although I look back now and think, you know, Peter got his face smashed in and he was out for the best part of 4 months, and I would have played, mm-hmm. you know, because that would have been...
He brought Amalgam Allen, mate, basically, and that would have been your... That would have been you, wouldn't it? You know what I mean?
Aye. Yeah, so, but it wasn't to be, so... And I don't regret anything. I really don't. I haven't got any axes or gripes about anything in football, because it's just what it is. It's football, isn't it?
Point to make is, we can't not mention the reception you got as a Sunderland player. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I remember the game very well. You were in and out of the side at Sunderland. I think Reedy was playing you on the right wing at one point, wasn't he?
Reedy thought I was a right winger. So this is a player that hasn't got a trick, isn't really that quick.
Yeah.
And me and Darius Kibicki, you remember Darius
Kibicki? Yes.
The Polish fullback?
Yeah. Darius was a right back. And I used to run to the line, have a bit of a dribble, turn back, give it to Darius, and Darius would cross it.
That was
that was my role. That was it.
So you got that horribly wrong. But you come on that day as a sub, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Surely you wouldn't have expected that reception.
No, I didn't, no. Absolutely. And I said afterwards that, you know, we spoke earlier about hairs on the back of your neck and that sort of stuff. And to have that was humbling.
Yeah.
Was really, really humbling because, you know, Martin, pal from Whitley Bay, he said that at the time, he said, because I'd spoken to him before, and he went, are you playing? No, I'm on the bench. No, I'm moaning because I'm on the bench. And he said, if you come on, you know, he said, you're going to get a good reception. And I'm thinking, they're going to be all right, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it to be what it was.
It was
brilliant.
Incredible.
It was absolutely fantastic. And it was a massive, massive humbling moment. It really was.
I've got one final question for you, mate. In terms of your overall career as a player, where would the couple of years you spent at Newcastle rank?
Oh, up there in the favourite part of my footballing life.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
Brilliant.
I've been really, really fortunate. I've played with brilliant, brilliant players. I've had fantastic managers. I've had a couple of knobs. Of course, you can't.
We need you back for part two.
Hello, yeah. Lou McCorry.
Lou McCorry was not one of my favourites, that's for sure. But absolutely right up there. And you know, it's if you were to us football supporters, football fans, when you're nine and I'm pretending to be Cyril Regis in my back garden.
Yeah.
You know, and you guys would have done it with whoever the
you?
Player
exactly
whoever the player was. You know, I've been massively, massively fortunate that I've had all of these years being able to play at stadiums like that.
Yeah.
And for supporters who love their team. You know, and I think that signing for Newcastle, as my Uncle Ronnie said, was a massive, massive, massive decision and the one of the best decisions I came to.
Yeah. I mean, for me, Ned, from a personal perspective, as I said to you before, we'll come on here, still my favourite ever player. And you know the calibre of players we've had since you've left. So, from my point of view, not Peter Beasley. It's you, because you scored the goals that kept us up. You scored the goals that put us up. That's my philosophy on your time at Newcastle. It was 18 months, but it was a brilliant 18 month, eventually.
Short but sweet.
Short but sweet. Thanks for the memory. Your Uncle Ronnie was right, mate. You'll always be remembered up here. So thanks for your time, Ned.
Thanks, guys.
Enjoy your day, and we'll do it again sometime, yeah?
Absolutely.
Thanks very much.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.